This is WHFR Dearborn, and now for the next hour, our public affairs show here at WHFR. Yes, we have our affairs in public. That's right. The show is called the New WHFR Journal, and it's going to start up right now.
When drug company...
Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal from Henry Ford Community College's own radio station, WHFR.FM. We're making waves. Yes, we're doing things a little bit differently here that other stations in Detroit don't do, can't do, don't want to do. And that's our intended purpose. And this show is local news and views about Dearborn and the surrounding area, even though some of these topics, of course, that we cover are not only important here, but throughout the nation even, and sometimes the world. And so we try to stay focused, though, on things that matter most to Dearborn. My name is Jay Koronick. I'm also station advisor here at WHFR-FM. So remember, do as I say, not necessarily as I do. But that's why I tell the volunteer student staff. I'm joined in the studio today, and today is May the 9th. Yeah, very important day, May the 9th, 2008, and I'm joined in the studio with our news director, Susan Morrell. There, Susan.
Good afternoon, Jay. It is a picture-perfect weather day here in Michigan. The sky is blue and no clouds, no rain, and the trees are in bloom. It's just picture-perfect. What could be better?
Well, I'm glad you told the people that are living in a closet right now that haven't got out of bed yet and they still have their blinds pulled that's the case.
And it's going to be low 60s today, nice and cool, crisp spring day.
Who said we aren't doing valuable work here at the station?
Well, the weather is very important, especially if you're a weather addict like me. Channel addict.
I'd like to think that the weather is part of the real world. And a lot of people are using their electronic devices so much, even listening to the radio, but watching television on the internet, talking on their cell phones, so much that they don't even realize what the real world that can affect people in very positive and negative ways is doing. One of the things I notice when I'm riding my bicycle and or riding with my window down in my car even, is that I do notice the weather, and I think ahead. I mean, is there a storm coming up? I look at the sky, the clouds, and it does make you more aware of direct physical contact with the world around you. If we lose that, then maybe we lose all real connection to other things, too, like how to relate to people one-on-one, rather than just thinking of people as, you know, some sort of stereotype, some sort of ideal or negative image in our heads. So I don't think we should lose contact with the real world at all. And thank you for mentioning that it's a wonderful, wonderful, clear, crisp day out there. make people feel good.
Always feel better when the sun is shining.
A lot of people feel that this kind of weather gives them a lot of potentials. Potential, first of all, to go outside.
Well, exactly.
But secondly, to go somewhere, you know, actually to travel outside somewhere and therefore accomplish something, whether it's exercise or sports or entertainment or visiting with friends and relatives, whatever, this kind of weather encourages that. And of course, you know, we have cars, umbrellas, rain slickers. We can do that in any weather, but we're not as likely. And as we know about Michigan winters and so on.
Well, I'm definitely going to be taking a walk.
There you go.
Outdoors today.
Okay, Susan Morrell will be taking a walk today. That is our first bit of news. And aren't you happy? I'm going to start with last Sunday's two papers, the Sunday Times, and just cover a couple of topics quickly. Bond issues are coming up, and it's going to be interesting to see how the votes are actually going to go. I think one was actually last Tuesday in one of the downriver communities, so that's already done with. We can't talk about that. But Trenton schools are seeking help from the city of Trenton the elected officials in the city of Trenton, to back their bond issue. And this is unusual because it's like two separate entities, legal entities, the school district and their property and their buildings and the city. Of course, they follow the rules, the laws of the city and so on, but it's two separate entities, and they don't usually, if they're asking for help from city officials like the mayor to endorse the value of passing a bond, that means they're in trouble. That means that they're desperate here. And here's the story, just very briefly. Officials of Trenton Public Schools have been trying to enlist support from city officials for the $37.8 million bond issue coming before the voters Tuesday. Oh, they were the Tuesday, so we don't know if it happened. But it's strange for me that, you know, it says coming before the voters Tuesday. If they've been trying to enlist that support, how can they get it in 2 days? I mean, how do they advertise it? You know, I don't quite understand that timeline there. They've been trying to get this support apparently since the joint meeting on April 24th. So, you know, the schools do matter. It is our future of our society that we are educating. We need to do it in the best way possible. And if the funding is necessary, I hope the people of Trenton decided to go for it. This is not a time you expect to have a vote on anything, though. I mean, it's not a usual voter time. And, of course, probably even Susan Morrell knows, or certainly Susan Morrell knows, why they have millage votes at these odd times.
Well, actually, I don't.
Just a quiz. Okay.
I don't.
It's because in the general election, the general spirit of a larger group of people, larger group of voters, and that's the largest group, like the November general election for president, okay, are against taxes. They will vote down anything, this is the majority, usually, that asks for more money. And, of course, in Michigan's situation, difficult economic times, you would expect that would be true. They just don't have the money, so they voted down not on principle because they don't have any extra money to give to the schools or anything. And so they have the elections at times other than times when a lot of people might vote, so that only the people that are really interested and knowledgeable in the schools, either those that are totally against what the schools are doing or those that are in favor of the schools continuing. So that's who votes when the elections are not as easily publicized. You know, they pick these odd times of the year on purpose because there's greater likelihood that the millages might pass.
Well, that makes sense.
And I think in most cases, I mean, I've lived in several communities in this area, Dearborn in my far distant past, in Allen Park and Flat Rock, Michigan. And I tried to stay well informed in those. I thought most of the time, like 3 out of 4 times in all those communities, Taylor, Michigan, I lived in for a while, I thought that the millages deserved to pass. But then again, I'm an educator. I understand what the money needs to go for and how vital certain things are when I find out about their needs for that. But I'm afraid that in a general election, most of the time, most of the voters will say no to anything that would cost them more money.
Well, most of the time,
even if it's needed, even if it's necessary for the kids in this case.
Most of the time, I vote yes for millages.
Well, that's very sweet of you. but I do think that most of the time it's needed. It really is. And you can carp about, you know, how the money is spent, maybe, in which case you should be careful who you elect to your school board. That's a separate issue, you know, that some people might be running on about, say, well, we're going to eliminate sports, or we're going to, do something else to redistribute the money that is coming in and maybe even lower the money. So you can have greater long-term impact if you know who to vote for that's of a like mind with you for the school board. the people that make those decisions over the budget each year. The millage things, generally, you know, they've been debated for years. They don't happen every year. And that's why most of them really should be endorsed. Most of them need to be supported. If the roof is falling in on the kids, the roof needs to be fixed. You know, it's pretty clear. And unfortunately, because of the big growth in population in the early 50s and continuing into the 60s, a lot of schools were built then. Well, they're 40, 50 years old now, and an awful lot of them need to be rebuilt, or in some cases torn down and start over again. So it is, it's difficult whenever you have to put out more money, but if it's money that has to be, it is spent for that purpose, the education of our own kids in the best possible way so that they can have some kind of future better than what we have, even if that's possible, considering, you know, the energy and other financial critical problems, environmental problems in the world today. But if you hope for something better for your kids, you got to get them a better education. And it's got to be up to date. And that costs money, usually, although there's ways to be careful how you spend it, no doubt. So,
well, I think it would be much better
what happened in Trenton.
Much better to spend the money here on our schools and infrastructure than in Iraq, I think.
Well, there you go. Okay.
I always have to get that in.
Well, it's even the efficiency factor. I mean, money here is better spent. It seems like Iraq is like some sort of cesspool. I mean, my latest estimate that I've read is that the total cost, even if we get out in 3 years, is going to be $3 trillion. $3 trillion, folks. That's 1,000 billions for each one of those trillions. You know, what has come from it? They don't even have reliable electricity.
Well, but I mean, do you know that a lot of that money has been stolen?
Yeah.
Put aside
by the officially democratically elected government into secret accounts somewhere.
No, but I mean, too. It's been stolen by contractors.
Well, that too.
By U.S. Yeah. contractors. Yeah. And doesn't seem like the government is even interested or cares in going after these people or trying to find it or anything else.
Well, there's a war going on. Who can worry about corruption at a time like this, right?
Oh, well, yeah, but you're talking about truckloads. I'm talking about truckloads of millions of dollars.
Satirical comment on my part, folks. Sometimes the tone of voice doesn't communicate effectively over the radio. So if it's a joke, I'll tell you it is so you can laugh, because maybe, or if it's a satire, I try to, you know, let you know that too.
And then the other issue is, and that we've talked about before here on the new WHFR Journal, is that these contractors are being paid buku bucks. Buku bucks.
Well, it's a battle zone. So, okay. Also in the Sunday Times, Wyandotte has gotten a grant from the Michigan Energy Office. Did you know there was a Michigan Energy Office? Why doesn't Dearborn and the other schools go for this? What is it? It's a project that offers students a chance to learn about solar power. It was hailed during a special conference recently that included Wyandotte Mayor James DeSana, Wyandotte Public School Superintendent Patricia Cole, and representatives from Johnson Controls. Okay, they're the company that probably did the installation here. Using grant money from the Michigan Energy Office, 54 solar panels were installed on Wilson Middle School's roof beginning last year and ending this spring. School's Director of Operations, Edward Campbell, said Wilson was picked because middle schoolers might show more interest in the program than high school students. That's crazy.
Say that again.
High school students don't care about solar power. That's the... In fact, that's what his statement was.
Well, that doesn't make sense.
If you're already in high school, you're into your cars and your big engines and wasting energy, so you're hopeless, I guess. Now, I'm exaggerating, but it sounds like he's making a reference to that. He said, we put the solar panels on the middle school, the junior high school roof, because it wouldn't be appreciated by the high school students. Now, what does that tell you about their school system if you're not teaching about the values of non-renewable energy sources in your schools from grade one? What, you got teachers proclaiming the use of oil and wasting non-renewable sources right and left?
No, but Jay, why is it necessary for them to appreciate it? Just do it. If it's needed, it's going to save money in the long run.
Yeah, and
why do you have to have their appreciation?
Well, because they do want to make it an educational experience for the students, and maybe that's how they got the grant, is that it had to tie it in with some sort of educational instruction program. Not necessarily making everybody solar panel technicians, you know, but it had to be somehow tied into the curriculum. I'm not sure.
I mean, that's an assumption.
Yeah.
The whole thing is an assumption.
Well, here's the rest of the comment here. It says, we felt, and this is Edward Campbell talking, that this age would be more appropriate before they become involved in other things that take their attention away. What can be more important than appropriate energy use and energy policy? Anyway, I guess dating and sex and drinking and drugs and who knows what else high school students do these days. I'm too far removed, I'm afraid. The district received this $50,000 grant from the state for the project, and the district matched that. So it was a matching grant. They had to put up 50 grand of their own. Wyandotte Municipal Services Director Melanie McCoy said that she's been working with the district on the project and that the grant's approval last summer allowed her to solicit contractor bids. The panels won't power the entire building, she said, but should reduce its energy costs somewhat. She says mostly be used inside the school for science lessons. 54 panels? How big are they, folks? I've done a little research. 54 panels should generate a good deal of energy. And in Wyandotte, and I had a person I was talking to last week told me about this, the solar power system has similarities to those at St. Elizabeth Catholic Church. St. Elizabeth Catholic Church in Wyandotte has a very forward-looking and right-acting priest there, the Reverend Charles Morris. And he's the one that got them into this. He said that solar panels generate enough energy for the entire rectory operation. Their church has no electric bill, therefore.
Thumbs up.
Now, if a church can do it, and, you know, churches, you say, well, churches are rich. No, it's just Wyandotte. You know, the church in Wyandotte did this, folks. Okay. And, by the way, it says Reverend here, so it's not a Catholic church. Okay, I'm wrong. Okay, I just want to get the, it's St. Elizabeth. Oh, no, it does say St. Elizabeth Catholic Church. So you call a priest a reverend? I guess you do.
I thought he was called a priest.
I think a reverend is, well, we'll get into the technical side later, but his name is Charles Morris, reverend or priest, whatever, and they're not on the grid. I remember the story. The person said this is that during the blackout here in Detroit for 4 days back in 2003, the whole northeast of the U.S. was out for a while. Mm-hmm. The whole northeast grid, right?
Right.
Maine to Michigan and so on, down into Pennsylvania. And the Reverend Charles Morris, or Priest Charles Morris, he was sitting there in the church, and people had to come in and tell him, hey, all the power's out, because he was watching TV, and, you know, lights were on, and he didn't know, because he had, you know, even in 2003, they had all these panels in place.
And so that saved him the power grid.
He probably was able to help some poor people in their congregation, too, that, you know, needed electricity for something or a place to stay for a while. I don't know what they did, but I mean, he had full resources available because of his forthright thinking and investment, and church dollars are scarce. Everybody knows that churches are, you know, at least parish churches are not really, you know, powerful fund drive recipients. And but he put the money for non-renewable sources, and now they don't have to pay any electric bills, and they're independent. And so this is another Wyandotte project, but it's for the schools, and it does give some power back into the schools. Now, I can't imagine that 54 panels wouldn't produce a significant amount of electricity, but probably the school wastes a lot of electricity too. You know, a lot of buildings, they always keep the lights on day and night, whether someone's in the room or not. They need little sensors installed. So if there's no one in the room, the lights go out automatically. They're doing that all over Henry Ford Community College campus, by the way.
Good.
They're putting little sensors in the room. For example, right here, we're in the Student Center building at Henry Ford Community College, folks, with our WHFR.FM studios. And out in the main room, it's a large dining room called the Pavilion. And it has, just for dramatic architectural reasons, these really tall glass sides to the room. Goes up 20, 30 feet. Acoustics are terrible. You can hardly talk from one person to another at the terrible in this area. But it looks pretty from the outside, right? Well, in spite of all the glass windows going all the way up and all the light that comes in from every angle, the fluorescence in the ceiling are full blast day and night.
Oh, they are?
Yeah. That's just wrong. You know, when the ambient light reaches a certain amount, they should go off. Because you just don't need them on anymore.
I thought that was sunlight. So, I thought it was sunlight coming from the ceiling.
Well, no.
No, I did.
No,
I
the sunlight comes in through the windows. Okay.
No, but I thought they were little windows in the ceiling. I thought it was, you know,
yes, there's some of those too. But if you go out and take a look, that the lighting grid is always on.
Well, that's and really a
that's
waste
gonna be
of
changed.
Energy.
That's going to be changed. But I'm just saying everybody in their homes and even the schools, they now are aware of how much they can save by just turning off circuits that aren't being used. They can save a tremendous amount. And so if these 54 panels don't help out the total operation of the middle school, which is no doubt a large, large building with maybe 30, 40 rooms, you know, going and something going on, you know, for 8, 10 hours a day. No doubt they use a lot of electricity, but these 54 panels should be a significant step to doing that. But they're trying to say the majority of the panels just produce electricity for experiments in science classes. But they do say it will reduce utility costs somewhat. Okay, so my challenge to the rest of the Downriver area is why don't you do it too? As long as the state of Michigan has some money somewhere. I didn't know they had money, did you? But they are trying to get involved in alternative energy.
They don't have any money.
but the Michigan Energy Office does. I mean, they gave $50,000 matching dollars to Wyandotte. I know matching is always a problem. Where do you find the matching money?
Right.
For any school district. I mean,
I don't know where they found it.
You'd have to sacrifice something else that you had money for. But if you think that it saves on your electric bill, though, they still pay electric bills. Electricity is not free to the schools. Then maybe that's a long-term good plan. You know, mm-hmm. you'll get in Michigan, from what I've read, you get payback on solar panels in 3 to 5 years. Okay? And there's tax incentives, even for the school districts and for any business and for any individual. Right now, it's as much as 40% back at the end of the first year. They pay the cost of the installation, the panels, 40% back the first year. Now, we don't know how much longer the state and federal payback's going to be, but if that's already cut down and then it only takes 3 years before you break even on your electric bills, and after that, it's all gravy, you know, it's all like free energy. And makes us less dependent on foreign oil, less dependent on nuclear, and so on and so forth. So bravo to the school district of Wyandotte. I guess they found 50 grand somewhere sitting around. Thank you, State of Michigan, for coming up with 50. But the principle involved needs to be expanded to all the schools. I'm sorry, to all our buildings and all of our homes too, folks. I mean, I know it's tough, but it's a major cost. But when you think about the payback, I mean, it's almost a no-brainer. And if you need some electricity somewhere, just go to the Catholic Church in Wyandotte, St. Elizabeth's, and they've got, you can plug in your rechargeables right there for a small fee, probably. Small donation.
Good for Wyandotte. Good for Wyandotte.
Well, right. Good principle for both the schools that I wanted to, I mean, for the church that I wanted to commend and mention anyway. And then I saw this article on the Wyandotte schools. But and let's also, yeah, cool. Let's educate the students. Let's not just pay the electric bills, but as long as they're there, let's tie it into the education. Let's show them how it works and why it's valuable and why it needs to be done everywhere. It's so wonderful. Where is the other Sunday paper? Okay. This is WHFR.FM. Oh, yeah, we're making waves here. Susan Morrell and myself, Jay Koronek, with you today, looking at Sunday's Press and Guide. The final word, well, not totally final, nothing's ever final in this world, but about the recall of the recall petitions that were circulated trying to get Representative Andy Dillon from Dearborn Heights, North Dearborn Heights, recalled, in other words, out of office. And that would be on the ballot coming up in August if the signatures are certified, if the petition is certified as valid. So the Secretary of State's office in Michigan is going over them now, but they turned in 16,000 signatures, and they only need 8,000 good ones.
I think it's terrible. I think this is terrible.
Well, we'll see.
I really do.
Obviously, some group was on campus yesterday here, and I guess it's legal. We're a public institution. It's I guess it's legal, at least on the sidewalks, to ask for people to sign petitions. I walked right past them. Shame on me. Basically, I think I'm in favor of ballot proposals. I'm in favor of democracy in action directly from the people. And so I would sign almost any petition. Now, of course, when it gets on the ballot and I have time to consider what I've done, then I might vote against it in the election where it's on the ballot. But there's not that many initiatives, not that many people that are trying to circulate them. And if they get all the numbers needed, then by golly, and they should, because not that many people even try, they deserve to be on the ballot. So I just recommend in general that you sign any ballot petition that you have in front of you. You know, glance over it briefly. I mean, the details are all, you know, they say the devil is in the details, or is that God is in the details?
No, not God.
Well,
the devil.
Could be either way, folks. I mean,
the devil is in the details.
Yeah, I think it's the devil's in the details. But
But Andy Dillon should not be recalled.
Well,
I mean,
I know.
He really should not.
You're from kind of that area, and you've seen his work in that. So
he's done a good job, and yeah. People elected him, and you shouldn't be recalled just because you're trying to resolve the state budget, which was in crisis for almost the whole year. And I don't think it was his fault because we had a budget crisis.
That is the crux of the petition. He needs to be recalled because he voted. And as House Majority Leader, of course, too, he organized and he was the lead person that got the higher taxes and the alternate business tax in Michigan proposed. Basically, it does raise taxes for the average people in Michigan somewhat. And so that's the sole crux to the petition, not whether or not it was necessary to raise taxes. They shouldn't have been raised, it seems like. And don't forget, folks, the opinions expressed in this show, though, by Susan Morrell, myself, and anyone else that might wander in, are only those of ours. They're only our opinions, not necessarily anyone here at Henry Ford Community College, faculty, staff, students, or administrators. But nonetheless, it does seem a very single issue. It's very cut and dried. If you didn't want higher taxes, you should vote Dillon out of office as a gesture. Now, of course, a majority of our legislators voted for it. It wouldn't have been passed. And Jennifer Granholm signed it into law. And, of course, if we didn't get something in law, the state would be bankrupt. We'd be out of business. There'd be vital services cut. So that was the only answer that the collective body could come up with. And let's not forget that the collective body includes, because Dillon is a Democrat, in the Senate, it's the Republicans that are in the majority there.
So right, but they had to fight tooth and nail to get that passed.
They could have stopped it. But I'm just saying that they could have stopped any tax increases, but there was no other answer, finally.
There was no other answer.
That the whole group could figure out to save the state from just a disaster.
And, I mean, it went on and on and on and on, and we talked about it here on the new WHFR Journal, and they were, you know, at a stalemate, and they couldn't resolve it, and they finally resolved it, and it was way past the deadline. Yeah.
Now, I did mention last week, you weren't here with me last week, Susan, but on my show, in case you haven't listened to it.
I listened to the podcast. Oh, yes.
I mentioned the a nonprofit research group in Michigan that each year, or almost every year, have sent to the legislature this supposedly nonpartisan, although a lot of big business and a lot of school college presidents are on the advisory committee of this nonprofit. But they have sent this long list of places where the state's budget could be cut. Long list. And nothing on this list, according to the articles that I presented last week, and you can listen at WHFR.fm, folks. Just lower right-hand corner of the page, scroll down to WHFR Journal podcast, and you can listen to last week's show. It's under the date, of course, May 2nd. But that organization, nobody has ever approved any of the cuts that they've suggested. So I couldn't find them on their website. I'd have to go to the document, and you know, it takes some time. But I just wonder what were they proposing? I mean, you can't close prisons, can you? Because we got so many felons. Why does Michigan have more people in prison per capita than any other state in the United States?
Is that right?
Yes.
Well, they say that
we got a lot of criminals here.
Guess what? Guess what, Jay? They say Detroit is the most dangerous city in the United States.
Well, but we're not murder capital anymore, so that's something to.
Well,
but it's all the everything else, I guess. But no, there's crime in major urban cities everywhere in the country, and Detroit hasn't had a good reputation, and it does have a large incidence of crimes compared to other places. But in general, across the whole country, crime is down. Okay, not in Michigan. Though you say, well, poor people steal for food. No, most of the criminals in prison, well, they are poor people, but they're not stealing for food. It's for drugs or greed, or there's a long list of other, unfortunately, more human reasons, and it's very sad, of course. But it's still strange how Michigan is first in so many undesirable things, like number one in
yes.
obesity,
yes.
number one in number of high school dropouts, number one in, and it just goes on and on. Mortgage foreclosures. I think the Detroit area is the number one urban area in the U.S. for foreclosed mortgages, too.
Well, that's a buying opportunity.
Yeah.
Depends on how you look at it.
Well, I just want to report that in case people don't get the paper, but you should subscribe to your local paper, folks. Get a subscription so it comes either in the mail or on your front porch every week. That way you can read and think about much more than we can present here on the show. But Representative Dillon, my guess is if they only need half of those 16,000 signatures to be valid, you know, then they're going to be able to proceed. You have a story?
Well, I have a story. I don't know where you want to put it, but I'm just reminding you.
let's put it right after. I've got a special Jim Hightower report that I'd like to feature right now. It's only 2 minutes and 9 seconds. Jim Hightower is a commentator and an author who was based in the Austin, Texas area. When Ralph Nader was asked whether or not he'd run for president, and he has said now he is going to try to run for president. But he said, if I don't run for president, Jim Hightower, as an independent candidate, should run for president. So this is Jim Hightower. He has a new book on the bookstands, and I'm not going to push that, but he's a very entertaining guy with his commentaries on issues that matter here and at the nation, too. So listen.
Where is his show broadcast from, Jay?
Only those stations that want to run it.
No, but where is his home base?
Austin, Texas.
Oh, hey.
Yeah.
Cool.
So here's Jim Hightower, and you just listen closely to this, okay, and we'll be back with comments about it, and Susan's story then, too, on something else. Here we go. Jim Hightower, this is his report for today, May the 9th.
When drug company arrogance combines with insurance company avarice, look out for an explosion of gouging. The essential idea behind the establishment of an insurance industry was not to maximize the profits of a few corporate giants, but to create a social good for all of us. Specifically, to spread the costs of medical care across our whole society. If everyone pays into the system, no one has to be crushed by the cost of care when they fall sick. The notion is that we're all in this together. But a pernicious ethic of greed has erupted within America's corporatized system, putting an unbearable cost burden on some of us who are already burdened with the worst illnesses. Drug manufacturers have been given monopolies over medicines to treat such deadly diseases as cancers and multiple sclerosis, even though these drugs were developed with government funding. In turn, the monopolists are charging exorbitant prices for these life-saving drugs. Enter the insurance profiteers, which have now created a special Tier 4 pricing system that forces very ill people into copayments that can cost them more than $1,000 for a month's worth of crucial pills. This price can be more than folks pay for their mortgages or even more than their monthly incomes. Pay up or do without, which is to say, die. This is Jim Hightower saying, remember, these are people who have insurance, yet this Tier 4 price gouging effectively steals the uniting principle of insurance from them, profiting a handful of powerful corporations and impoverishing our society. Since the corporate system is abandoning America's essential notion of the common good, it's time to abandon it. Now is the time to push for an American version of single-payer health care for all. Check out HR 676, sponsored by Representative John Conyers, 202-225-5126.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go With the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
That's Jim Hightower's comment for this week. You can get more information about Jim Hightower and his books at jimhightower.com. Now, it was not a commercial. That was an underwriting statement. We do thank them for making this available to us. It's always fun there. And the local connection? Yep, there's a single-payer health care bill that could create it if passed into law that's already been introduced in the House of Representatives in Washington, D.C. And it's our local Congressman John Conyers who did it. Okay, I know John Dingell would be for it because John Dingell's dad introduced the first single-payer health care bill, I think 1948, in Congress. And so I bet Dingell would vote for it, too. Isn't it terrible if you do happen to accept Jim Hightower's premises here and his interpretation that no one of the three remaining potential presidential candidates of the two biggest political parties are in favor of single-payer health care? All Barack and Hillary even want is some modifications and an increase in Medicare. And I think that's unfortunate. John Edwards, who I thought spoke brilliantly on this issue, and nobody listened to him, he was, I think, one of the last standing candidates in the Democratic Party that was for single-payer health care. And it's something to look into. It's something to encourage people to do. And what's the name of his book then? Even Dead Fish Can Float Downstream. I think that's the... it's an activist book, folks. If you want to know how to get involved, there are books, there are things you can find out of how to participate in a formal, legal way in our democratic system to help influence policy. And you can have a big influence because most other people don't. I mean, most people don't even vote in any election except the presidential election. Except even in the presidential election, most people who could vote don't because there's a lot that aren't even registered. So you say, oh, we had a voter turnout of 55% or 60% for that last presidential election. Yeah, of registered voters. If you add in the number of adults that are not registered for whatever reason, who of course can't vote because they're not registered, it's less than a majority that vote even in the big presidential election. So imagine if just a few people would get active. It's letters to the congressman, it's emails, it's maybe go to Washington and knock on a door. I mean, like to take a summer vacation? Go to Washington, knock on some doors, see if anybody's at home. They probably aren't there. They're probably back in their own districts or something for summer vacation. But it's challenging thoughts. We highly recommend them. And I have to play the next one by Hightower also. That healthcare comment was actually his commentary from yesterday. So we don't like old news here at WHO.
Right.
Here's his comment about oil and gas prices.
At ExxonMobil headquarters in Houston, management refers to the executive suite as, quote, the God Pod. But while the honchos of the world's biggest and richest oil corporation might think of themselves as holy omnipotents, most Americans have more demonic thoughts about them, and they definitely consider today's gas prices ungodly. So I was not totally surprised to learn recently that a group of church folks have been holding a series of pray-ins at gas stations across the country. They gather in front of the pumps, clasp hands, and reverently beseech God to deliver us from these high prices. God is the only one we can turn to at this point, says pray-in organizer Rocky Twyman. Our leaders don't seem to be able to do anything about it, he says. The prices keep soaring and soaring. A public interest group called Consumer Watchdog says it sympathizes with the prayerful. Given the complete inertia and silence of this White House on a crisis that has people feeling just hopeless, prayer is probably as good as anything, one member of the group says. Actually, Twyman and other pray-in participants are not simply hoping for a miracle. They believe that God helps those who help themselves, so they're calling for people to do more walking, biking, carpooling, and other actions to cut back on gasoline use. They also hope that praying at the pumps will finally cause politicians of all stripes to take notice of the public's desperation, perhaps even prompting them to do something about the rip-off prices that are squeezing so many working families. This is Jim Hightower saying, to learn about some concrete steps that Washington could be taking on both price gouging and oil dependency, contact Consumer Watchdog at 310-392-0522, extension 305, or go to the website consumerwatchdog.org.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Jay Kornick and Susan Morrell back with you here on the new WHFR Journal, Jim Hightower's second commentary for the day, and that's all we're going to do, but we just wanted to get that across to you. So that group, if you want to know what you might be able to do about price gouging and oil dependency, prayer is something. I thought it was interesting that the group was understood that prayer, they're even praying for other people to stop using gasoline as much. You know, get some exercise, walk, carpool, bike, you know, just use fewer trips. You know?
I guess my big concern at this point, Jay, with the situation, and I think I mentioned this the last time I was on your show, is that a lot of these prices are being driven up right now by these traders on Wall Street, commodity traders buying and selling oil as a commodity, and they're driving the price up on the stock market. It's strictly the stock market that's doing this, and I don't even know why that should be legal at this point. I mean, it seems to me that the government should put a stop to that immediately. I mean, this is bringing down the entire world. This is putting us all into inflation. It's causing food prices to go up. People are starving to death. They don't have... No, seriously, they're having food riots. They don't have enough food. I mean, the government absolutely should step in and stop it. That's what I think.
But we're not alarmists here at WHFR.FM. Oh, no. We don't foster fear and trembling at all.
But it's not fear. It's a reality. It's a reality that is affecting the price of everything around the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was watching one of my favorite 24-hour news channel clowns, as he calls himself, Glenn Beck, last night. 2 years on the air. CNN headline news in the evening, Glenn Beck. And he is quite a clown, very entertaining, but he is, talk about alarmist, you got to hear what he thinks, what kind of situation America is in that he was ranting about last night.
I mean, heard him. I watched him.
Pretty bad time.
I watched him. Yeah. Did you see Ben Stein?
Yes. Ben Stein is
always
entertaining.
I love Ben Stein.
Yeah, and Ben gets it right quite often, even though as a professor of economics, he actually went to college and studied economics, although he has conservative interpretations. He's still very forthright about what's going on in the country. But Glenn was railing this that the oil companies are being interfered with by our government right now in ways that keep them from drilling for more oil. Well, of course, we don't really, with all their huge profits, what are they doing now with them? They're just using them as profits. I mean, they're not doing... They should be, if they want to stay in business in the future, they should be developing a clean way to go and convert coal into oil.
Well, he was talking about that on the
show.
And
we have tons of coal, and we just need something to tide us over until we can get non-renewable sources going, which money should go into that.
Yeah,
I mean,
but Jay,
government is still, I think the government has to still, get involved with the oil companies and give them, well, if needed, the proper incentives, such as we're going to take away your profits unless you spend them in these ways.
Yes,
I know that's
why?
Intruding on freedom of business or whatever.
But do you know that they are not doing that? How do you know that? How
do
you
know? It's been reported time and time again. They are making no investment in alternative energy with certainly the vast majority of their profits because it doesn't there's not enough payback or profit margin in it at this point. It's a loss situation. So like all good businessmen or bad businessmen in terms of public interest or public good, they are considering short-term profits only. And the short-term profits are right there in oil as long as it lasts. I mean, they just keep raising their prices because supply is dwindling, so we got to raise our prices. But if people have to have the oil, then they have to keep paying more and more. And so, corporate interests don't always look at the long-term plan of what's good for the corporation, like 10 years, 20 years in the future, or what's good for the people
but
of this country.
But Jay, if 30 to 40% of the price increases that we've experienced within the last 6 months or year or whatever is caused by commodity trading on the stock market, do you think that's fair?
I have to tell you, I don't understand what commodity trading is. So,
it's like buying stocks and bonds and blah, blah,
it
blah.
You're suggesting it artificially elevates the price of things. And it could be very true. I think it's a very complex issue. And your opinion,
ethical at this point? I don't think it is.
The question is, what place does the federal government have in enforcing a certain degree of ethics or responsibility upon big business? I think that unbridled business will result in monopolies and no service to the public.
Well, that's what we have
that the, that
right
the
now.
Strong will dump on the weak, and that's pretty much what we have is monopolies in several different industries, because the government in its ability to say, well, we're going to, Republicans since the year 2000, deregulate, whether it's the ownership of the media or take away regulations. What they're saying is, in effect, we are allowing the strong to dominate and to eliminate the weak.
And that's what's going on in the oil industry. There are only five or six companies.
Right. When you eliminate the competition, you don't have capitalism anymore. So I think the appropriate place of government, even in a conservative administration, is that government has to be involved to keep the competition fair and equal. No company should be allowed to have the power to force others, force the competition, valid competition, out of business. That's a public decision marketing. But something like Microsoft, with 90% of the share of computer software in the United States and 80% worldwide, has been found guilty of monopoly practices here in this country for 15 years, all the way through the courts, all the way to the Supreme Court, guilty, guilty. I've said this before, and it's true. And then George Bush in 2000 told the Justice Department, don't prosecute him. They're guilty, but don't give them any penalty because they're good for this country. That is completely wrong. In the European Union, they are now under about $15 billion worth of fines, which they're a rich company and powerful, so they got their lawyers going. This is 20-plus years they're trying to not pay the fines, but thank goodness the interest is still building up on that. They are so guilty of doing unfair monopoly practices, which is not the way capitalism should work, that they need to be broken up, they need to be fined, they need to be punished for what they've done. They don't deserve the market share. And besides, their operating system is full of bugs. So there, I've said
yes,
it.
Yes, but
so.
That's what needs to be done in the oil industry. It needs to be broken up. And I haven't heard George Bush say anything about these high oil prices. Have you? Have you heard him say anything?
No, and Hillary and McCain say, well, we should just reduce the sales taxes for the summer, have a little summer vacation from gasoline taxes. That's not going to do anything. I think all the economists, all the editorial writers, it's not going to have any effect at all. Sounds good, but in fact, the prices will go up to make up the difference of the sales taxes going down.
Even Glenn Beck says that.
Yes, even Glenn Beck says that. Just like the rebate checks. Have you got your rebate check yet?
No, I didn't qualify.
Yeah, see, I don't qualify because I got a full-time job, so I don't qualify. But even that, people, they've interviewed people, average people all over the country. They're going to pay off bills, and they're going to save the rest of the money. That in general, that's what they're going to do with it. And that's not going to help the economy. The economy demands that you go out and you blow the money on something new. And, that's a wonderful thing to do. Ooh, free money, I'll go out and spend it. But that's not the best thing to do for your situation economically. You need to pay off those credit card debts and other big bills, get them out of the way, and then save what you have.
And then there's been a 30% increase in the price of gas and food every time you go to the store. The prices are going up daily.
Some budget experts or economists say that if you get a lot of money or any money, free money, new money, you should pay off bills, you should save, and only spend, if you got to, spend, let's say, 10%. you know, it's nice to have something like that. Where was that story? We have 11 minutes.
So. Okay, we have 11 minutes, and I came across an editorial in the Detroit News from yesterday, Thursday, May 8th, and this is talking about cable TV, and I think most people have cable TV now, and the title of the article says, "Don't hike fees on cable TV viewers," and then there is a bill in the legislature that could cost subscribers $34 million a year, and the measure locks in a 2% cable fee on top of the existing 5% tab. It's actually a tax on cable subscribers, just what we don't want. And then that money is transferred to, guess where, local governments. An estimated $34 million from Michigan consumers would be extracted from that 2% increase of the cable fee. And the money will go to support public access channels. That means public education and government. And that would be local talk shows, gardening advice, school announcement, those kinds of shows. And we're already, the cable companies are already subject to a franchise fee of up to 5% of gross revenues. And city officials are free to use that money to bankroll the cable TV venues. And the cable TV should be paid out of general fund. General funds are other revenue sources. But cable companies are seen as money trees. But guess what? It's not free money. It is coming out of subscribers' pockets. And so public access programming gets mixed reviews. Most people do not watch public access programming.
There's not much left, though, since Comcast fired all of its local programming staff. So.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. Well, that happened last December, right before Christmas. Again, the largest cable company in the U.S. with its concern for its employees fired everybody before Christmas in local public access. Right?
No, I didn't know that. But anyway, the editorial says that the city should pay for local access out of existing revenue, including the 5% cable franchise fee. Asking for more money is a double tax on cable subscribers.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to switch to this story. It's Jack Lessenberry, but it's not his usual full column from the Metro Times this week. Because you might have seen these ads on TV if you watch TV a lot. There's a very deceptive, very misleading, sort of like animated thing about, hey, our legislature right now is considering these bills for green energy and solar, and it's a wonderful thing, and we think they should be adopted, don't you? Well, who could disagree with that? But here is the real crux of the story from Jack Lessenberry. Whatever finally happens in the presidential race, most of us will still have to live here and scratch out a living a year from now. And you might be interested to know that the state legislature right here in Michigan is close to quietly sticking it to you on electric and gas rates. Unless you do something to stop a package of bills in the state Senate, and soon, again, he wrote this 2 days ago on Wednesday, residential customers will pay more for light and heat. Big business will pay less. The bills will also make life cozier for the big utilities, Consumers Energy and DTE Energy, which will find it far easier to raise their rates. And they won't have to worry as much about competition or some pesky little company making a breakthrough and selling us energy for less. How did this happen? Asks Jack Lessenberry. Largely, he says, by misrepresenting what these bills really mean. Your elected leaders have already quietly rammed a package of bills through the House. Gino Polidori vote for that locally? I hope not, because he was misled, that are deceptively referred to as the, quote, green energy bills, unquote. Indeed, they do call upon the utilities to sell more renewable energy, quote, unquote, which means wind or solar power. And as Lessenberry says, hey, you can't get any more environmentally correct than that. Except, he finally concludes, it is largely a sham. As far as he can tell, the bills don't specify any penalty if the utilities miss their targets, as has happened with other clean energy mandates. What they clearly do, he says, is shift $70 million in annual energy costs from business to homeowners. They would also allow any rate hikes proposed by utilities to automatically go in effect in 90 days unless the Michigan Public Service Commission says something. That means the utilities can jack up the price without any politician having to take the blame. No wonder they want to vote for this, right? The bills may not be specific on renewable energy targets, but they are clear on killing competition. They restrict all other companies to 10% of the market combined. That sounds bad for their competitors, but if these bills pass, you, gentle listeners, will be the real losers. The main legislation is Senate Bill 1246, sponsored by the bombastic Bruce Patterson, Republican from Canton. And Lesson Berry says, make some noise now or pay later. The governor, by the way, Governor Granholm, loves these bills. She thinks they will create renewable energy jobs. You can see those new jobs, he says, finally here, floating right next to that blueberry pie in the sky.
Well, I don't see how it's going to create new jobs. I don't see that.
I knew when I heard the spot on TV that it was a sham, that it was the opposite of what it was supposed to be. I just knew that. Here's two other stories.
No, but why is Governor Granholm for it? I don't understand.
She wants anything that might even have the chance of touching on renewable energy and renewable energy jobs. But if there's no guidelines and there's no penalties if you don't do it, it's not going to happen. Why? Because there's not as much profit in that direction. These big companies are run like big business. They're not run for the public interest. They're not owned by they're run for profit. Let's admit it.
Okay.
Got to move on.
Just
okay.
Tell me, should we have the cable TV tax?
Of course not.
Okay, thank you.
That's a mess, too, and the state of Michigan should be doing something about that. I'd like to feature, but we don't have time now. This is really to the point, and it's just too long to read it all, but the editorial from Tim Skupik. He talks again about our short-term, that is term-limited leaders, so-called leaders in Lansing, how the public does not believe any of our legislators are competent. They want all of them out of there. Well, guess what? Term limits does it anyway, right? Automatically gets them all out of there. What has that done for us? Nothing, folks. All you people that were in favor of term limits, that's not the way to do it. You keep the good people in office, you take and vote the bad people out of office, as Mayor Guido of Dearborn said. We always already had term limits. It's called elections. Gosh sakes. And there's a beautiful article. It's in the Press and Guide on the opinion page, 6A, Wednesday's Press and Guide here. Tim Skupik, View from Lansing, the same guy that is the host of the TV show Off the Record on Channel 56. And other channels, public channels, depending on your cable system.
Jay, do you know that there's a petition going around in favor of a part-time legislature in Michigan?
Yeah, I haven't seen that locally. I mentioned last week the Fair Tax Michigan petition that is going around. I'd like to see that passed, and I presented that on the show 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago with Ned Apigian, too. Here's an interesting thing is that I mentioned last week that Circuit Court Federal Judge Mark Summers here in this area, we elected him, folks, 6 years ago. He's coming up for re-election this year. He can either be re-elected or someone else, and someone else has now taken out documents to be on the ballot against him. It's a, can I say pretty blonde female? I just did, I guess. And her name is Candace Abbott. And she is going to be running against him on the ballot. And of course, there's now a third lawsuit in progress that I told people about last week that's in the papers about supposed misconduct by Judge Summers in regard to firing, hiring, maintaining employees that either don't agree with his moral or religious opinions. And that's the charges. And he's countered them in letters and editorials. And as I said last week, we need to let the courts work that out and not jump to conclusions that we should replace him until it's totally investigated in a formal, fair way. So I'm not casting aspersions here. But in the midst of this supposed misconduct accusations. Of course, other candidates can jump in, and quite appropriately, wouldn't you know, it would be a woman because all of the misconduct suits are from other women. Okay, so it looks like he's anti-women or something, and so a woman is running. But maybe he is got a problem here, or maybe we have a problem with him. But I'm just saying, do not draw any conclusions, folks. Just because somebody files a civil suit doesn't mean it's true. Absolutely not. You know, that has to be adjudicated. It has to go through a court system.
I agree.
Yeah. So just don't jump to conclusions about Judge Summers. I've met him several times, not in depth. He hasn't been on the show here, but we've interviewed him at Homecoming and elsewhere. And he and his wife seem to be extremely good people. And the paper, rightly so, to be fair to him, has pointed out his qualifications, his background, his years of service. No such charges or problems ever came up before. And so don't jump to conclusions, but just
yes,
wanted to point that out.
The timing is a little suspicious.
Yep. And the timing, speaking of time, that's all the time we have for the show today. It's sorry about it. It's unfortunate, but there you go. See? And Susan thought we didn't have enough to talk about today. We
well,
still have stories.
I hope you're going to get out and ride your bike, Jay.
I hope so, too. Yeah. It's going to rain on Sunday, folks, they say.
Spring is here.
Exercise now. Grass cutting tomorrow. And next week, folks, since I've got to cut grass, even though I don't want to, I'll share with you my philosophy of grass.
Oh.
And that's not marijuana.
Oh,
folks.
Please.
Yeah, I know. Please. She said, please. Okay, I'll definitely do it then. Yeah. All right. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for listening, folks. And remember, you can always go to our website, whfr.fm, and listen to the podcast, the show, all over again, in case you want to take notes on something. This is Jay Kornick, along with Susan Morell, saying goodbye for now, and be careful out there.
Thanks, Jay.
Until then, let's keep stirring things up.